Great, we're starting on time. Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff. Half an hour of comedy
Excuse me. Are you Robert Claster?
Yes, I'm Robert Claster, but I'm trying to...
Robert Claster from New Rochelle, New York?
Yes, but I'm trying
you
to do...
You thought you could elude us, but we found you at last.
Excuse me, who are you? I'm trying to do a radio program
I don't
here.
Care what you're trying to do. I'm Miss Grundy from the New Rochelle Public Library. Now do you know what I'm here for?
Well, look, I really can't afford a donation right now.
No, we don't want a donation. We want our book back. According to our records, on October 5th, 1959, you checked out a copy of The Little Engine That Could, and we've tracked you down and finally found you. It wasn't very clever of you to use your own name on the radio.
Look, can't this wait until after my program is
over? I've waited long enough, young man. I have federal marshals waiting outside, and we've obtained extradition from the state of California, and we're prepared to see you get the punishment you deserve. You know, almost a whole generation of youngsters have been denied the privilege of checking out The Little Engine That Could due to your callous disregard of library rules and regulations. Hand over that book.
Listen, lady, I don't have your damn book.
I can see you haven't picked up any manners over the years. If you don't have the book, you'll have to pay for it, plus the fines that you've accumulated.
Isn't there a statute of limitations on something like this?
Thank God there's not.
Okay, anything, so long as I can get on with my show. What's this going to cost me?
The book costs $2.49, and there's a ceiling on fines of $7, so that will be $9.49.
Okay, let's see. All I have is a 10.
You'll have to take your change in pennies. 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58.
Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm the host of Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy heard every Friday night here on KCRW. And that, what you just heard, was the opening of my program from September 9th of 1983, which was the first time we did a back-to-school special, which is what we'll be doing tonight, sort of an abbreviated back-to-school special, and also an abbreviated salute to the end of the baseball season, two of Fall's Delights. Depending upon whether you're still in school or not, I suppose you can look at education as a delight. And we'll be listening to such people as Bill Cosby and Steve Goodman and Tom Lehrer and God knows who else. It should be a lot of fun, though. We also are going to have to talk about Peter Cook and whether or not he is the same person in the Paul Temple Mysteries, but we'll get to that at the end of the show. So without any further ado, oh, also, that was Jackie DeLaurier, KCRW's own public affairs director, portraying the librarian there. Now that there's no more charade that all of that is real, I can reveal these things. Once again, a brilliant performance by Ms. DeLaurier. And speaking of brilliant performances, here's Robert Klein talking about his education in the 50s.
You know what I could never stand? The school lunch.
Oh, man. When I was a teacher, too, as a student, both, you know, to mix in with... Oh. There's always this lunchroom lady, kind of pale, complected, with a white dress and a net on her hair, you know. Some Board of Education ruling, a health rule, keep her hair out of the food, you know. Because her arm's like an ape. But she's got no net on them, you know, just on her head. But she's bald altogether, but still wearing net, you know. And kind of lady that wears a corsage for every holiday, no matter how minor. You know, Happy Sugar Plum Pumpkin Day! Happy Tuesday! You know, happies, lots of happies. Well, they're getting so elaborate. Around Christmas time, she wears in her breast a complete nativity scene that moves. Little Salvador Dali figures. Kings and princes running all around her chest. And she's doing her job for the morning, which is stirring the Yankee bean soup, which will cause many absences in the afternoon. This is the government surplus, yeah, you know, like it was then 32 cents a meal. Yankee bean with Franks, little red jobs that bounce, you know, dung! You know, those little toy-looking things, hi, you know. This is so, really good. This is stuff that India rejected. Oh, no, thank you very much. We don't want this. No. No. Is this the Yankee bean? No, thank you very much. No, we are hungry, but we don't... I know you say, Frankfurters are sacred in our country. We cannot eat them.
No, leave me alone.
I think the pride of my school days was when I was in shop, in junior high school. Shop, yes. I remember we had a nasty shop teacher. That's what we called him, Mr. Nasty. He just didn't like kids at all. And one time I was reading a comic book, not in his class. We had 2 minutes to go before the bell would ring, and he came up, yanked it away from me. You'll get this back at the end of the semester. Why, does it take you that long to read it? But the proudest thing I remember was shop having an apron. You know the apron they put on you in shop? That gray apron? That meant so much to me because I used to excuse myself and pass by where the girls are cooking. And they thought I was something. I used to have 37 pencils in my apron, you know. I'd walk by with grease and oil on my hands that I'd borrowed from somebody's car, you know. I'd walk out on that guy's car and get some grease and oil on me, you know. I'd walk by, you know, and my girlfriend Doris used to come out and say, "Wow, what are you making now?" "Oh, yeah, how you doing, Doris? What are we making? You mean this week?" "Well, this week we're just finishing up a Boeing 707. One of the great lies of our times. You know what else? I could never figure out who made the spigots or the faucets in the schools. The guy couldn't have had you washing your hands in mind when he made them. Because it's impossible to wash your hand with holding the thing while the water comes out. You can't do it. And I spent 3 hours trying to wash my hands, trying to figure out how I could give it a good burst and put both hands under at the same time and go like that. And then that soap they give you in a bowl, you gotta have about 12 bowls full before you can get a bubble. Who does all that? Somebody weird, I bet you. You ever had a cold and try and survive the day blowing your nose on those paper towels they keep in there? Why, you can clean your whole lip right off. All the skin can be gone in one day.
I took my exams. I had a method, I'd say. Basically, I know the data. So 9 o'clock tonight, I'll glance at the material and I'll ease my way through that exam because basically, I know it. 9 o'clock comes along, I say, okay, now I'll glance at the data, but first I'll take a nap. I lie down, I wake up in time for breakfast. I'm walking through the hallways of school. I say, okay, don't get psyched out, David. The other kids are going to try and give me the impression that they know the data just because they've studied. All you gotta do is stay cool. Because so long as you are cool... Buzz! I open the door of my classroom. I walk into the room. I forget my name. I forget everything. I'm standing in the coat room trembling like David Eisenhower at an orgy. I'm led to my desk. The blue book is slapped down in front of me. I say, okay, just concentrate on that. That's all that counts. I open up the blue book. To my left is sitting Norman the Brain. 2 feet on top of which sits an immense head. Inside of which is simply the sum total of the acquired knowledge of the entire universe. Norman never studied. He was too busy with his hobby, stamp collecting and open heart surgery. I say, okay, don't get psyched out. Just concentrate on that blue book. Get your way through that. And to my right is sitting Helen Lewicki. 2 feet on top of which sits a red Angora sweater. Inside of which is simply the sum total of Helen Lewicki. which in later years I was to find out is also the sum total of the acquired knowledge of the entire universe. I say, okay, just get through this. First question. Refute the allegation that the literature of the Middle Ages was moribund. Oh, yeah! I'm in the wrong room. Lewicki stretches and brings me back to reality. And fantasy. I say, okay, I take out my pen. I start my writing. First, my name. In between the David and the Steinberg, Norman hands in his completed blue book. I shake it off. I say, that's not important. You just get through this. Okay. Refute the allegation of literature of the Middle Ages and more urban. I write. There are those who say that the literature of the Middle Ages was moribund. There are those who say that the literature of the Middle Ages was not moribund. In my opinion, the literature of the Middle Ages was not moribund. Needs a little something. I continue. Why, you may ask? A darn good question. And one which I shall attempt to answer in the ensuing pages. In order to refute the allegation that literature means moribund, this would require a knowledge of the literature and history of that period, which I wish to God I had. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David Steinberg. And now to get us gradually from the subject of education into the subject of athletics, here is Tom Lehrer with a piece which encompasses both.
Now we come to that peculiar bit of Americana known as the football fight song. I was reminded not too long ago, upon returning from my lesson with the Scrabble Pro at the Harvard Club in Boston, of the days of my undergraduacy long ago, when there used to be these very long Saturday afternoons in the fall with nothing to do. The library was closed. Just waiting around for the cocktail parties to begin. And on occasions like that, some of us used to wander over to the, I believe it was called the stadium, to see if anything might be going on over there. And one did come to realize that the football fight songs that one hears in comparable stadia have a tendency to be somewhat uncouth and even violent, and that it would be refreshing, to say the least, to find one that was a bit more genteel. And here it is, dedicated to my own alma mater and called Fight Fiercely, Harvard. Fight fiercely, Harvard. Fight, fight, fight. Demonstrate to them our skill. Albeit they possess the might, nonetheless, we have the will. How we will celebrate our victory. We shall invite the whole team up for tea. How jolly. Hurl that spheroid down the field and fight, fight, fight. Fight fiercely, Harvard. Fight, fight, fight. Impress them with our prowess. Do. Oh, fellas, do not let the crimson down. Be of stout heart and true. Come on, chaps, fight for Harvard's glorious name. Won't it be peachy if we win the game. Oh, goody, let's try not to injure them, but fight, fight, fight. Let's not be rough, though. Fight, 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 and do fight fiercely. Fight, fight, fight.
That was Tom Lehrer with Fight Fiercely Harvard. Whenever I hear that, I'm always reminded of RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, a big math and science school in the East. They have a football team, which is largely a joke, and the football team's cheer goes like this. Secant tangent, cosine sine, 3.14159. At any rate, that brings us on to our next topic, which is baseball. It's the end of the baseball season, and all but one of the races are well decided. And I've done a number of specials on baseball and felt that it was a bit soon to hit you with all that stuff once again. But there was one piece that I got too late for inclusion in the last special that I did, and it's just too wonderful to let go. And it features the voice of Mickey Mantle with Teresa Brewer singing a song called I Love Mickey. After that, we will hear the baseball classic, Who's on First, with Abbott and Costello, which it's impossible to hear that one too many times. And then we'll say a few words about Steve Goodman and hear his dying Cub fans' last request. But first, here's Teresa Brewer with Mickey Mantle.
Mickey who?
You know who, the fellow with the celebrated swing. Oh, I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, the one who drives me batty every spring. If I don't make a hit with him, my heart'll break in two. I wish that I could catch him and pitch a little woo. I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
Mickey you.
Mickey me.
That's who. I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, his muscles are a mighty sight to see. Oh, I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, the one I want to steal right home with me. Oh, I'd sacrifice most anything to win his many charms. I'd like to be a fly ball and pop.
Mickey who?
Mickey Mantle. I love you.
Who, me?
Who, I love you.
Not Yogi Berra?
Who, I love you. Mickey!
Hey, Abbott. What do you want, Costello?
Look, Abbott, I understand that you're going to be the manager of the Lou Costello Junior Youth Foundation baseball team.
Yes, we just organized the thing.
Oh, you did?
Sure.
Well, I'd like to play on the team myself. You know, I know something about baseball.
Well, that would be accomplished.
Well, I'd like to know some of the guys' names on the team, so when I meet them on the street or in the ballpark, I'll be able to say hello to them.
Why, surely I'll introduce you to the boys. But you know, strange as it may seem, they give these ballplayers nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Nicknames, pet names, like Dizzy Dean.
Better Daffy?
Daffy Dean. And
I'm their French cousin.
French cousin?
Gouffet.
Gouffet. Well, now, let's see. We have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
What silly name? I say who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You know the fellow's name?
Well, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
Have you got a first baseman?
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Now tell me who's on first.
That's right.
I want to know what's the guy's name on first
base. No, what's on second
base? I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. Now, we're not mentioning third. Now, let's get together.
How did I get on third base?
You happen to mention his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third
base? No, who is playing first?
I'm not asking you who's on first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you, what's the guy's name on third?
What is on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again.
I can't change their name.
You got a first baseman?
Absolutely.
When you pay him off every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it. Why not? The man's entitled to it.
Who is?
Yes.
So who gets it?
Sure he does.
Look, the left fielder's name.
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field. Now, you know these players as well.
well as I do.
You got a catcher?
Surely.
The catcher's name?
Today.
Today, and tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it. I don't even... Look, all we got is a couple of days on a team.
I can't
all.
Help that.
A couple of
don't
days.
Don't get excited, though.
Who's your next side
in? Take it easy.
You know, I'm a pretty good catcher myself.
Tell the dummy.
Now, I'll catch today myself.
All
I'm
right.
going to catch. And tomorrow's pitching on a team.
Yes.
Now, tomorrow throws the ball and the guy up bunts the ball.
Yes.
Now, when he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
If I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
Oh, so I throw the ball to naturally.
You do nothing of the kind. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Did I throw the ball to naturally?
But you don't.
I throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's what I'm saying.
You're not doing it that way.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
You ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Well, say
same
it.
As you. I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Naturally. Now, whoever it is drops the ball so the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to be caught. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What'd you say?
I said, I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
Of all the baseball pieces that I've played and heard over the years, one of my very favorites is The Dying Cub Fan's Last Request by Steve Goodman. There's something wonderful about the Cubs and their relationship with their fans. The Cubs, as he says in the song, have not won a pennant since we dropped the bomb on Japan, and yet the fans are out there every year and they continue to make it a successful franchise. There's also something wonderful about Steve Goodman, who passed away yesterday, and the irony of this piece will not be lost. Somebody said that perhaps the excitement of the Cubs actually being in first place this late in the year, only a few days away from clinching the pennant, may have just been too much for him. Steve Goodman was a wonderful singer-songwriter and a very funny guy. He died in Seattle 2 days ago at the age of 36. And was, I suppose, lucky in a way, because very few people are able to even maintain a battle with leukemia for 15 years. So it is dedicated to Steve Goodman and all of the Cub fans out there that I present the Dying Cub Fan's Last Request by Steve Goodman.
By the shores of old Lake Michigan, where the hawk wind blows so cold, an old Cub fan lay dying in his midnight hour, the toll. Round his bed his friends had all gathered. They knew his time was short. On his head they put this bright blue cap from his all-time favorite sport. Told him it's late, it's getting dark in here, and I know it's time to go. But before I leave the lineup, boys, there's just one thing that I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League. Told his friends, you know the law of averages says anything will happen that can. That's what it says. But the last time the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. The Cubs made me a criminal, sent me down a wayward path. They stole my youth from me. That's the truth. I'd forsake my teachers to go sit in the bleachers in flagrant truancy. And then one thing led to another, and soon I discovered alcohol, gambling, dope, football, hockey, lacrosse, tennis. But what do you expect when you raise up a young boy's hopes and then just crush them like so many paper beer cups, year after year after year, after year after year after year after year after year after year. those hopes are just so much popcorn for the pigeons beneath the L tracks to eat. He said, you know, I'll never see Wrigley Field anymore before my eternal rest. So if you have your pencils and your scorecards ready, I'll read you my last request. He said, give me a doubleheader funeral in Wrigley Field on some sunny weekend day, no lights. Have the organ play the national anthem, and then a little na-na-na-na, hey-hey-hey, goodbye. Make 6 bullpen pitchers carry my coffin, and 6 groundskeepers clear my path. Have the umpires bark me out at every base in all their holy wrath. It's a beautiful day for a funeral. Hey, Ernie, let's play too. Somebody go get Jack Brickhouse to come back and conduct just one more interview. Have the Cubbies run right out into the middle of the field. Have Keith Moreland drop a routine fly. Give everybody 2 bags of peanuts and a frosty malt, and I'll be ready to die. Build a big fire on home plate out of your Louisville Slugger baseball bats and toss my coffin in. Let my ashes blow in a beautiful snow from the prevailing 30-mile-an-hour southwest wind. And when my last remains go flying over the left field wall, we'll bid the bleacher bums adieu. And I will come to my final resting place out on Waveland Avenue. The dying man's friends told him to cut it out. They said, stop it, that's an awful shame. He whispered, don't cry, we'll meet by and by near the Heavenly Hall of Fame. He said, I've got season's tickets to watch the Angels now, so it's just what I'm gonna do. He said, but you, the living, you're stuck here with the Cubs, so it's me that feels sorry for you. And he said, oh, play that Lonesome Losers tune. That's the one I like the best. Closed his eyes and slipped away. Well, Scotty, it was the dying Cub fan's last request, so here it is. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? Do the Cubbies still play in their ivy cup to bear your ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free and the doormat of the National
And there you have it. That was Steve Goodman, and he will be sorely missed. I know who I'll be rooting for if the Cubs make it to the series. That's for damn sure. At any rate, let me see. Next week's program is a program salute to flight and airlines and such. We'll be hearing from people like Bob Newhart and Shelley Berman and many others. As far as the Peter Cook controversy is concerned, I called his agent here, and his agent didn't know, but put me on to his British agent. A letter is already in the mail to try and solve this mystery once and for all. I would bet the farm that the Peter Cook who has worked with Dudley Moore all these years is not the same Peter Cook who plays Paul Temple. It just doesn't sound like the same guy, but I would bet the farm. At any rate, if you have any concrete evidence on that, let me know. The address is Bob Claster, Funny Stuff, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. And I think that's going to do it. Some interesting new comedies to watch for. Watch ER. I thought that was pretty good. The Cosby Show was pretty good. Let's see what's happening. At any rate, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening, hoping you can join me again next week. And until then, reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Right, Sarah?